Number two, by the time they filed their amended notice, giving her the statutorily mandated notice requirements, the 20 days and so on, that was in September of 07. She had already physically departed the state. She had moved back to California with Kylie, enrolled her in school, had applied to reinstate her California driver's license, which she showed the judge in the court below, and had left the state. So it wasn't like she was splitting after she was properly hauled before the court in Nevada. She wasn't even technically before the court in Nevada, pursuant to a valid Chapter 130, or Chapter, actually still not valid to this day. They've never cited Chapter 130 as the jurisdictional basis for the court to act. They have maintained this, as I said, showed you the statute there, that the Chapter 125 has anything to do with this. And again, you ask a good question, Justice Gibbons. I mean, didn't she have actual notice? Yes, she had actual notice. But is a good public policy for this court to say, well, in interpreting a uniform act, we're going to dispense with certain notice requirements if there's actual notice? I don't think that that's good public policy for the state. I think that there are reasons, good reasons, for these notice requirements, and that they can't be waived, and they shouldn't be ignored by the court below or this court. And when you think about the bottom line on this case, you know, what is the consequence of this court affirming the lower court? The consequence is that they're both in, he has attorneys in California, she has attorneys in California, she and the child live in California. He may or may not live in California. The California has the original order. They, you know, why should we impose on Nevada district courts the obligation to resolve child custody determinations when people don't even live here anymore? And the key fact here is that she didn't live here at the time that they did their amended notice. It's still defective. Our position is it's still defective because they never relied on the correct statute. And that's important. But equally important is the fact that at the time that they did the amended notice, still under Chapter 125, she had left the state. And it doesn't, it cannot relate back. You can't say that just because somebody is physically present here, that automatically means that they're residents of the state. If that was the law, then anybody that stepped off a plane at McCarran Airport could be subject to process in this state because they're physically present here. When she had declared with no agenda, other than the fact I'm leaving Nevada and I'm coming back to California, when she declared that under oath in March of 07, she could, and they had the right to contest that in the court below. Had they wanted to make an issue out of her residency, they could have done that, but they didn't. They simply said, since she was here when we started this process under this case, I guess, even though it hadn't come down, it wasn't decided, you know, it was decided in February, it was unpublished, that's sufficient to invest this court with jurisdiction. And that throws away all of the procedural safeguards that Amy and other women, or men too, I guess for that matter, have to not subject them to the jurisdiction of another state unless there's a jurisdictional basis for that. And if you look at the facts as recited in this case, this unpublished case, it's clear that there was a factual, major factual difference between the facts of that case.
Mr. Wells, I can tell you, Mr. Wells, we're not going to rely on the other case. I mean, you can argue persuasively or we should do something, but we can't do it.
Well,
it's not an opinion, you know. So.
Okay. The only persuasive part of this case, I think, because the facts are different in terms of when that person left the state and when she got served properly, because there was no indication in this opinion there was improper registration. The important part about this is that the court recites in this order that you need to do this under Chapter 130. You can't simply adopt another statute, 125, and say that suffices. There's no case law that says that. The whole thrust, I think, of the appellant's position is that because she was on actual notice, because she was physically present here, that's sufficient. But that isn't sufficient. It shouldn't be sufficient. And let me just, since I think the facts and the law are on the side of the respondent in this case, let me, if I may, presume to give you a couple public policy considerations for a case like this. I don't see any public interest in enforcing Nevada courts to wrestle with California support orders in terms of modification. Obviously, the court has the power to do that if it properly has the jurisdiction to do that. And if there's no other basis, Mr. Woolick said, well, there was no other state that had jurisdiction at the time that this petition was filed. That's not true. Once Amy went on record as saying she's moving back to California, California clearly had jurisdiction, and I think California retained jurisdiction until another court would take that jurisdiction pursuant to a valid registration. That's what the statute says. Once this court has valid jurisdiction and issues an order, then this court retains that exclusive jurisdiction until it's taken away by another forum at some time in the future. Well, that hadn't happened. So it's not true that Mr. Simon was without a remedy. He was still litigating a California divorce. I don't know how it would have been impossible or why he wouldn't have simply said, I've got a child here, I've got a child support order here, I want the court to modify it. Clearly, they could have done that. But he chose to come to Nevada, I think, trying to get a better break. I don't think from a public policy standpoint, and I'm almost done here, that it serves any purpose for us to advertise Nevada as a child support haven. That's really what's going on here. I mean, we cut to the chase. I think that that's not good for the public image of the state to say that we're going to carve out exceptions to a uniform act so that people can rush over here and get a Nevada judge, presumably to reduce child support from another jurisdiction. And the remedy that Mr. Simon has, if this court affirms the district court, is he simply files a motion in California. Amy's there, the child's there, his attorneys are there, her attorneys are there. Why subject Nevada courts to the time and expense of applying California law, which is what the statute seems to suggest, is that the Nevada district judge has to interpret California support law to make a ruling in Nevada. It doesn't make sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wells. Mr. Willick, your rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I waited for Mr. Wells to actually read you the registration provision of Chapter 130. He didn't, because as of the date of the hearing of this matter, which is when the applicable law was in question, it said, file the foreign support order with the district court, which is exactly what we did. As of the date of the hearing, we did exactly what the statute said you're supposed to do, the prior defective statute having been modified. So that whole nonsense about 125A versus 130 is nonsense. It simply has no application here. As to 611, the notices in question are set out verbatim on page 12 of our brief. It says we have filed a child support case. You have a chance to oppose it. The next one says you have 20 days to oppose it. And if they had chosen to oppose it, they had three possible grounds to oppose the registration. One, that the original court didn't have jurisdiction. Well, they're not going to argue that. She's the one who filed in California originally. Two, that it's invalid because it had been set aside. Nobody's ever even suggested that's possible. Or three, that the person objecting had no notice of the original proceedings, meaning the California proceedings. She filed the California proceedings. So, yeah, she had 20 days to file an objection. The three bases on which she might have filed an objection are all not true. They know it's not true. They had no basis to file anything. That's why they never have. They've never attempted to say that the registration's improper because the registration is not improper. They have no legitimate basis for objection. The forms in use today in the family courts of at least Southern Nevada, and I think the Supreme Court's forms as well, say if you have a foreign custody and or support order, file this form. The form says that today. They are still giving everybody notice under 125A because that's the standard form in use. It's been approved by this court. That's the form of notice that's going to everybody. And Mr. Simon is no less eligible to give notice under that general registration provision than the people using the self-help forms. In short, if there is any kind of an error in the form of registration, and we don't concede that there is, it's harmless error. And notice has nothing to do with jurisdiction. They simply can't get around the fact a petitioner may commence a proceeding by filing a petition in a tribunal which can obtain personal jurisdiction over a respondent. Yes, if she steps off a plane at McCarran, and if there is a proceeding in Nevada where she can be served, she can be served. And the decisions of this court for the last 100 years have said that if you serve somebody in the state of Nevada, you've got jurisdiction over them. That's what our statutes say. That's what they've always said. He can't get around it by saying, Gus, well, I'm not really here. Because in my mind, I'm on a beach in California.
What about the public policy argument that Mr. Wells made, though, about why should our courts be involved in this?
Because it's under Nevada law. He's just dead wrong in that regard. If this case proceeds here, it applies Nevada procedural law, Nevada substantive law, Nevada child support law. The California law is totally irrelevant, which is exactly why they don't want it heard here. Because California has an absurd child support statute. which says that basically if the payor is rich enough, it doesn't make any difference about anything. They escalate forever. In this case, she's getting $15,000 a month, basically blackmail money, which is what she negotiated to try to keep the case quiet after she turned up pregnant. She doesn't want the child support order to be amended to anything actually having anything to do with support of the child. That's what's really going on here. Because she wants $500,000. That affidavit he was talking about, that she executed in California, it says on its face, I live in Nevada. Which is why he filed in Nevada, to modify the child support order. It says, I may move back to California, and I want $500,000 a year because someday when I move back to California, the cost of living is going to be higher. And I just can't make it on $15,000 a month in child support. That's what her affidavit said. But she admitted she was living in Nevada. And that's all that UWTSA is concerned with. The public policy is that once somebody is, once a child support modification motion is filed where somebody lives, that's the court that hears the case, using the law of the place in question. Both parties required to file an away game. That's what the statute says. And he can pretend it says something else, but it doesn't. That is as simple as it gets. Jurisdiction, let's see, the time to measure jurisdiction is the time of filing of a proceeding to modify the child support order. I don't know how much clearer that can get, and that's U.S. official comment to Section 205, which has been adopted in Nevada, first in 1997 and then an amended form in 2007. It's a straight matter of law. As to any technical deficiency, for 140 years, the cases of this court have said that everything relates back. If I file a defective affidavit, if I file a defective notice, and that defect is noticed during the course of the proceedings, I can fix it at any time. That's been the law here since 1867. Again, he doesn't address those cases, but he can't ignore them out of existence. The face of UWTSA says that the state where the child support modification motion is filed should resolve it. And that really is the end of this case. There really isn't any more to it, except that the reason we need a published opinion is that people keep trying to get away with this. They keep trying to flee the state.
And Mr. Wallach, maybe if the Justice Turing says his permission, I can comment on the published opinion. Generally, the panel doesn't do opinions. Well, on rare occasions, we will. But the idea is to let the en banc court do the episode, seven people speaking versus three. Whatever we do on this case, you know, let's say we resolve the case by an order. I mean, either side can ask to the en banc court for reconsider and to publish. I mean, you can't. I mean, it's your option under the rules of appellate procedure. But I just wanted you to know generally it's an uphill battle to get a panel to do an opinion, but Justice Cherry's presiding, and he can create some exceptions.
I would ask this court to look at the public policy. If I get three of these cases inside of 6 months, where defendants, having been served with modification motions, scoot out of state to try to defeat the jurisdiction of the court, I'm only one law office. I know that the problem is more widespread than that, just from anecdotal evidence from my own observation. So I would ask the panel to...
Well, I know that Justice Sada, Justice Gibbons, and myself are very concerned about... that maybe over the years we've ignored the family practitioners a little bit. So we're trying, I know with Rivero, we spent a lot of time on that to try to make sure that we were doing the right thing for the jurisprudence in that area. So I'm glad both of you brought this to our attention.
I'd gladly answer any questions the court might have as to any of the matters raised by my opponent.
I have no questions, Justice Gibbons, Justice Sada. Thank you both. Both of you lived up to your expectations, by the way, and we thank you for your expertise, and also we thank you for your civility. There's arguments.